From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Osher Institute at the University of Arkansas invites lifelong learners to the Language of Hollywood Storytelling, Sound, and Color series each Monday at 11:30 a.m. through April. Classes will analyze and appreciate film as an art form, plus explore what it takes to make a film great. More information is available at 575-4545 or olli.uark.edu.
KUAF Night with the Naturals is Thursday night at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together. One lucky guest will throw out the first pitch if 200 KUAF tickets are sold. Deadline to purchase tickets is today. A portion of sales will benefit KUAF. KUAF Night with the Naturals tickets are only available at 927-4063, or you can visit KUAF.com for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, other ways to teach and other ways to learn. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us inside a local school of innovation. And we'll go on stage in Bentonville as Northwest Arkansas Community College prepares their staging of The Giver.
First, state officials and Governor Mike Beebe yesterday celebrated the 40th anniversary of the Community Development Block Grant Program by touting government's role in supporting development. The state distributes funds to small communities with an emphasis on supporting low to moderate income people. Gary Baxter, the mayor of Mulberry, expressed appreciation for the program's role in bringing an edamame processing facility to that town.
Governor, I remember when we first talked about this, said that you'd be one of the few governors who could say that we're actually bringing jobs from China to Arkansas to produce a product to send back to China, and that's a reality.
Raymond Chung is the chief financial officer and co-owner of American Vegetable Soybean and Edamame in Mulberry. Chung praised the state's capacity to spur development.
I think everything was done in about 6 months, pretty much from start to finish, the funding and the actual completion of the plant. I really can't think of really any other state in the country where things would have happened so efficiently and smoothly.
Chung said American Vegetable, Soybean, and Edamame invested nearly $5 million, while the state loaned nearly $1 million to the development. Officials also spoke about grants for a museum about Japanese Americans interned in camps during World War II and the expansion of a shelter in northeast Arkansas.
Roughly 400 families in southern Washington County now have a reliable, potable water source as the rural water infrastructure project in that area is all but complete. Last week, the final water taps to be added to the project were turned on for the first time. Josh Moore, general manager of the Washington Water Authority, which manages the rural water district, says the project, which took 2 decades to come to fruition, has been a huge success.
Our original intent was thinking we would have 300 people signed up down that area that would get water. And we were able to, maximizing our dollars with a good contractor and a good bid, we were actually able to extend further into some other areas, and then we had more people sign up as well. So we're looking at a 33% over what we had originally projected out there for those people.
The project was paid for with a combination of grants and loans, and Moore says the greater-than-expected demand will help pay off the infrastructure investment sooner than projected.
The loan that we got for the project, it'll help to pay that off. It also helped to pay off loans that had been previously taken out to get water just to those areas so we could extend those areas out further. Like our Southeast Phase 1 project, we actually run the bigger lines through the Phase 1 project to supply enough water to this Phase 2 area. So it builds itself from the beginning of the system, and we got to take water all that way. So we've been doing upgrades continually trying to get water going that way.
Moore says the only work left to be done on the project is final cleanup where the water lines crossed private property. He also says while it wasn't feasible to add some unserved areas to the water system now, when the current project is completely closed out, Water Authority officials can then turn their full attention to potential funding mechanisms for building additional pipelines in the future.
Officials with the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department this morning officially opened the first usable section of the Bella Vista Bypass. According to the department, the segment now open to traffic extends 3 miles from Highway 72 west of Hiwassee to Highway 72 east of Hiwassee. The segment costs nearly $20 million to build, and even though it is currently two lanes, it will eventually be expanded to four lanes when it becomes part of Interstate 49. The next segment of the bypass, scheduled for completion, extends from Hiawassee to County Road 34 west of Bella Vista. That's expected to be finished by the end of this year.
Northwest Arkansas Community College is offering a discount on tuition for out-of-state veterans. According to the college, the tuition waiver will be available to any veteran with a DD-214 who was discharged under honorable conditions. Veterans taking advantage of the waiver will pay the in-state tuition rate of $122.50 per credit hour. The new policy takes effect in the fall.
1 week from today, officials with the Cherokee Nation will break ground on a new casino and hotel in Roland, Oklahoma. The new facility will replace the existing Cherokee Casino in Roland. The new casino will have 170,000 square feet filled with 850 electronic games, table games, and a high-limit poker room. Plans also include an entertainment venue and a six-story resort-style hotel with 120 rooms and convention space.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals fell to the Springfield Cardinals last night. At the end of four innings, the two teams were tied, but the Cardinals scored three runs on a single, triple, and two sacrifice flies in the fifth inning. At the end, the Nats lost 5-2. The Naturals are now 4-13 on the season. The series continues tonight at Arvest Ballpark.
And tonight, mostly clear. Lows will be in the mid-40s in northwest Arkansas, lower 50s for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow, highs from 75 to 80. And then for tomorrow night, increasing cloudiness, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows tomorrow night throughout the region in the mid-50s. This is Ozarks at Large. This spring, several Arkansas public schools and several Arkansas public school districts are applying to the State Department of Education to become schools of innovation. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
In its quest to encourage new and creative alternatives to conventional public education, the Arkansas Department of Education has invited public schools and districts across the state to submit applications and plans to establish schools of innovation. Assistant Commissioner at the Arkansas Department of Education, Dr. Megan Witanski.
And the process begins with the group meeting and forming a Council of Innovation. That's typically have a teacher, which is a licensed staff member. You have a non-licensed staff member, a building level principal, or they can have someone to be their designee to sit in on their behalf, a parent, a community member, and at least two students from that particular school who are interested parties. And they make determinations on what they feel like, first of all, if they want to participate in some type of innovation for their school.
Schools of innovation, which seek to transform and improve teaching and learning, were approved by the State Board of Education last winter after the Arkansas General Assembly in 2013 authorized the enabling legislation known as Act 601.
The rules actually have us defining something that is something that's done in a new or creative alternative to the existing instructional or administrative practices. So the goal would be that it's intended to improve the academic performance and learning for all students.
Like public charters, schools of innovation will be financially supported with Public Education Foundation funding, currently $6,267 per child. No additional funding was appropriated for innovation schools, Witanski said. And innovation schools will also be similar to charters in that they are waived from certain rules, regulations, and statutes that apply to all state public schools. Applicant schools set up innovation school councils to act as think tanks, she says, to come up with plans to present to constituents for a vote.
And if that has a majority vote of 60% or more, then that majority vote means that particular school and or district has approved that to be submitted to the school board of that school or of that district.
It's then up to the Arkansas Department of Education Commissioner Tom Kimbrell to approve or reject submitted applications.
And if it is approved, they will be designated as a school of innovation or a district of innovation for 4 years. and that can be renewed on a cycle of every 4 years at the commissioner's discretion.
Applications to become schools of innovation for the next school year must be submitted online by May 1st and subsequent years by March 1st. In Arkansas, 18 public schools have converted to charter schools, which are also innovative, but they don't involve many stakeholders in the planning process. Both conversion charters and public charter schools apply to the state's new charter authorizing panel. Approved schools of innovation, of course, must be accountable for delivering an equitable and adequate education that align with Arkansas state education standards.
And all of our public schools can either use in-house materials that they develop within their district or within their school, or they can seek assistance from vendors if there's particular materials or supplies that they need. But as far as School of Innovation, if there are particular waivers that they feel like impede their ability to reach that level of innovation or the transformation to improve the teaching and learning in their school, that's when they would actually put in their application a list of waivers that they would like to be waived from to participate in whatever those practices are that they've isolated would be best practice for their students.
And this brand new education initiative is not just about school lessons, Dr. Witanski says.
For example, there may be districts who want to address absentee rates in their district. And so they may be able to generate some innovative ideas about how do we ensure that our students are here and ensure that our students are here on time and ensure that our students are here consistently. So they may want to come up with a process that might isolate that particular area that they struggle with. For other districts, it may be poverty, or it may be something completely not related to academics but directly impact academics.
Schools of innovation and other non-traditional learning environments, according to the National Education Association, have the potential to facilitate education reforms and develop new and creative teaching methods that can be replicated in traditional public schools. Leverett Elementary in Fayetteville is applying to become a school of innovation. Leverett Elementary counts 350 preschool through fifth grade students with 55% free and reduced lunch, 15% ESL. It's also a STEM school incorporating science, technology, engineering, and math into an interdisciplinary curriculum. Principal Cheryl Putnam.
We had already decided we were going to be a conversion charter, which means we would stay a part of the district. We would still be run by the district under the same policy and guidelines with waivers from the state. So when Act 601 came out that called for School of Innovation, it sounded like the same kind of thing. We would just have a lot less paperwork, and it would be a direct line to the commissioner. With some support from the State Department giving us guidelines on application and some feedback on that, whereas the charter process, even if it's a conversion charter, you go through the board and then you're either approved or not. This gives us feedback along the way. So we're excited to have the opportunity to work directly with the university and the State Department, of course, with the district.
Principal Putnam was encouraged by the district superintendent to become an innovation school, plus 80% of staff had already agreed to becoming a conversion charter.
So then we just said, okay, is everyone okay with this switching from the conversion charter process to the School of Innovation process? And everyone said, yes, let's do this instead.
Principal Cheryl Putnam says they are being guided in the application process by staff within the U of A's Office of Innovation for Education, as well as curriculum and instruction. And they've constructed their Innovation Schools Council, again, made up of teachers, parents, and students, in this case, elementary kids who serve on the student council.
The biggest change I've seen is the student engagement and their excitement for learning. They're more focused on their own learning, and it's really providing a lot of motivation, whereas before the teacher was in charge more of their learning, and now the students are really, there's a lot of direction is put on them, and how far they go is dependent upon them, and they're really excited about it.
A few other states, including Colorado, have passed innovation school laws to improve student outcomes, with nearly 50 such schools established since 2011. Schools of innovation are educational laboratories, and to that end, the Arkansas Department of Education will post plans on its website for teachers and administrators to share. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Schools of Innovation rules can be found under the Commissioner's Memos link on the Arkansas Education Department website, which is arkansased.org.
In about 13 minutes on this edition of Ozarks at Large, what it takes behind the scenes to make a play come to life on stage.
I knew that I had a night scene at the end, and knowing blue lighting, I do it first because it eats up a lot of instruments. So I have to go ahead, and that was the first thing I did. I've got a couple more instruments that I need to add some blue to, but still, it's the first thing to do, and then I can add on and use that blue for color correction in other scenes as well.
We'll meet the technical crew behind the staging of The Giver at Northwest Arkansas Community College. The play opens Friday night. We'll hear that story coming up on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a Muslim tests the waters in Kentucky in a run for state senate.
Just because a lot of Republicans in my district does not mean they dislike me because of my Muslim background. They might dislike me because I'm a Democrat.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Tune in for Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. This weekend, one of the largest annual participatory events in Northwest Arkansas will take place, the Coleman Race for the Cure. Saturday's race is the 16th annual and includes a competitive 10K race, a competitive 5K, as well as non-competitive 5K and one-mile runs and walks. The parent organization, Coleman Ozark, will then distribute thousands of dollars raised through the races to area agencies that are providing aid to women and men with breast cancer.
This is our resource library. Anyone who wants to can come in and grab booklets, pamphlets for free, and then check out specialized books on cancer treatment.
Erin Allen is program coordinator at Washington Regional Cancer Support Home and the project director for No Excuses Breast Cancer Outreach Program. Through both of those positions, she's been able to see the benefit of Coleman dollars. She says the Washington County Regional Cancer Support Home in the past year has been able to provide over 500 services to local clients with aid from a Coleman grant.
We've been able to do things like free breast cancer screenings. We've been able to help pay for diagnostic services for people who don't have insurance. And as more people are getting insurance, what we're seeing is that a lot of people still need help paying for procedures because they can't meet their deductible or their co-pays. So we're able to help out with those as well.
Coleman Ozark says since 1998, the year of the first Coleman Race for the Cure in Northwest Arkansas, the organization has granted $8 million to entities in a 10-county service area. This year's grant slate was recently announced and included $670,000 for a dozen local organizations. Lauren Marquette is the Director of Mission Services for Coleman Ozark.
The last grant cycle, we had almost $1 million in requests, and we were able to fortunately grant out $670,000, but that's still a big hole that we still need help, and you know, hopefully our race will help plug that hole some more.
Coleman Ozark also earmarks some of the money raised for national work and research.
25% of the money that's raised that doesn't go straight to our local community goes to our national research portfolio to help find the cure. And there's been some drugs that have already been and different research that's already been benefiting women in our area from money that we have given to research. And we've given actually over $2 million.
The Coleman Ozark region includes now a pair of counties in southern Missouri, added 3 years ago. Lauren Marquette says the board of directors realized women from those Missouri counties were traveling south into Carroll and Boone counties in Arkansas for services. Coleman money helps pay salaries for breast health navigators, people who help patients diagnosed with breast cancer weave through the financial, medical, and emotional mazes following a diagnosis. Misty Johnson, a navigator with the Cancer Support Home in Fayetteville, says the navigator's role can vary, but it begins by just being available.
I just actually met a client today, a patient, and her main concern was just to know that I was there. She didn't have any questions about her diagnosis. She didn't have any questions about her upcoming appointment. She just wanted to know what could I, you know, could I go with her to appointments? Could I come to her house today? She just had to know that she had someone because she only has her two sons.
Dr. Dana Greer knows very well about the services provided by Coleman grant recipients. She also knows how valuable it can be to have those services available. She's on the board for Coleman Ozark and is a physician at the Breast Center. She's also a breast cancer survivor. She says there are many ways to screen for breast cancer, and hers was discovered on a screening ultrasound.
It turns out I have dense breast tissue, and this was a new tool that we were using in our office, and I volunteered to be screened with this new tool. And I was the first patient that we detected using this new screening tool, so it was kind of ironic. But since that time, we've found several additional, about seven cancers that weren't found on mammography. We know that mammography is not it's not going to find every breast cancer. So we have lots of different things that we use in our toolbox.
Dr. Greer's profession meant she was always concerned with breast health, and her work as a board member of Coleman Ozark emphasized that concern. But understandably, she says her involvement in the last couple of years has become even more important.
I mean, I've always thought I was empathetic, and I think I was, but the first few months, I wasn't secretive about my diagnosis, but I didn't just, throw it out towards every patient or whatever. But it's definitely something that's useful to me in gaining trust from my patients. When I'm, talking to somebody and they have that skeptical look in their eye, like, you've got to be kidding, or you're just pulling my leg, there are a lot of times where I can pull out my personal experience and say, hey, I've been there, I know exactly how you're feeling, and it's just immediate icebreaker.
Dr. Greer says the Coleman grants, funded through the annual Race for the Cure, are given to areas of largest need, including paying for mammograms and or MRIs. She acknowledges the grant requests every year outstrip the money available. However, Erin Allen with the Washington Regional Cancer Support Home and the No Excuses Breast Cancer Outreach Program says Coleman money has helped the No Excuses program reach more women as early as possible than ever before.
We'll do whatever we can, be it a screening event to make things more convenient, or we'll provide translators if the barrier is language or cultural. We're doing some really neat investigations about outreach to not only the Hispanic community, but also the Marshallese community. I'm talking with some English as a second language teachers who are serving adults that are in need of this type of care. So we're doing all we can to reach people who really do face barriers to care.
Lauren Marquette, Director of Mission Services for Coleman Ozark, says it's possible to trace the effect Coleman grants have on patients through a timeline. She says one recent patient named Carmen is an example.
She got a mammogram and diagnostic testing from community clinic. She then needed a mastectomy, which she received community clinic, all Coleman funding. She came here to the Washington Regional Cancer Support Home for wigs and some prosthesis. She actually used another grantee of ours that is a Hispanic breast health navigator because she didn't speak any English, and then she went to Hope for prescription assistance. So she used four Coleman fundings to make sure her continuum of care was such that her quality of life was good.
And for Dr. Dana Greer, her work with the Coleman Ozark Board, her work with her patients, and her experience with breast cancer all serve as added points of emphasis when it comes to understanding the value of what the grants can provide.
And so many of the things that I took for granted, having somebody with me at my appointments, having somebody bring me food, having somebody take me to my appointments, having somebody just sit there and listen, when they were throwing all this information. Those things were just, the kind of things that I thought everybody had. But we see typically a lot of our Coleman grant recipients don't have that support system. They may not necessarily have, a lot of them don't have insurance or money to pay for their co-pays. A lot of them don't have family in the area, a lot of single moms. So we see, all those things are really needed services that a lot of women just take for granted.
The 16th annual Coleman Ozark Race for the Cure is Saturday at the Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. The first race, the competitive 10K, begins at 7:30. Other events last from 7:45 through mid-morning. There is a race registration office that's open at the Pinnacle Hills Mall this week from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. There is also online registration available. And also Saturday, there are Kids for the Cure, Bark for the Cure, even a Sleep In for the Cure event. For more information, ColemanOzark.org. It is Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Guess who's with us?
I don't know who.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, it's me.
Yeah.
Today's Teen Tuesday. A treated poetry workshop starts at 4:30 today at the Fayetteville Public Library. Reuse and recycle old books and magazines to create treated poetry artwork.
What is treated poetry?
I don't know. We need to go over and find out.
Okay.
They'll let us in.
Sure.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah. Create a comic strip. 4 o'clock Wednesday at the Bentonville Public Library. That's
like
actually
fun.
For grades 4 to 6.
Oh. Who, can I chaperone?
Sure.
Okay.
Your media. They'll let you into play.
Oh.
Use that to your advantage.
It's a cool thing. And there is a film screening called Girl Rising, discussing how educating girls can change the world and how you can make a difference. That's at 6:30 on Thursday at the Fayetteville High School Performing Arts Center. It's hosted by Girls Rock at Ramey Junior High.
There you go.
And it sounds like a really interesting topic.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And support for KUAF comes from the Walmart Amp, presenting Steve Martin, the Steep Canyon Rangers, and Edie Brickell August 3rd. This concert will highlight Steve Martin's blend of comedy and bluegrass, and the band will introduce new tracks from their recent live album. Tickets and information available at amptickets.com or 443-5600.
The 2014 Fayetteville Roots Festival is coming in August, but you can win tickets now. The KUAF website giveaway is offering one winner a chance to win two sold-out VIP passes to see Lucinda Williams, the Wood Brothers, and more. The winner will be announced Friday during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration is available at KUAF.com.
When we put the spotlight on an upcoming theater production in our region on Ozarks at Large, we usually talk to the actors, maybe the director, maybe the playwright. In just a few moments, we'll hear from the technical crew behind this month's production of The Giver at Northwest Arkansas Community College. Before that, a reminder of some of the other offerings this spring on area stages.
Fort Smith Little Theater will present Make Believe this Thursday through Saturday. This dramatic comedy looks at the way a family deals with grief. Curtain time is 7:30 p.m. and more information can be found at fslt.org.
The Ozark Arts Council will begin its run of Footloose Thursday night at the Lyric Theater in Harrison. Performances scheduled through May 4th. If you'd like to know more, thelyricharrison.org.
Theater at UA Fort Smith will present its one-act play showcase Thursday through Saturday at Breedlove Auditorium. Showtime is 7:30 p.m., and students will take on the role of director in this annual season-ending showcase. Ratings and genres will vary by play, and admission is free. For more, visit uafs.edu.
The University of Arkansas's Department of Drama will finish its run of William Shakespeare's As You Like It this week. Performances are scheduled for Wednesday through Sunday. More details at drama.uark.edu.
Speaking of Shakespeare, Theater Squared is in the middle of its run of Hamlet. Performances run through May 4th. More at theater2.org.
We told you this was a busy time. Students at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's Academy of the Arts will also present a couple of performances in the coming weeks. A Year with Frog and Toad Kids is scheduled for April 26th. That's Saturday at Blue Lion at UAFS downtown. Pirates of Penzance Jr. will be on stage at Breedlove Auditorium May 16th through the 18th. uafs.edu/academy for more.
Arts Life Theater will present Hairspray Jr. May 1st through the 4th at the Continuing Education Auditorium, which is located just off the downtown Fayetteville Square. Directed by Julie Gable, this production has a runtime of about 70 minutes. For more information, artslivetheater.com.
Trike Theater will present not one, but two different productions next month. Cinderella Confidential will be on stage May 10th and 11th at Northwest Arkansas Community College's White Auditorium. Then May 23rd through June 8th, Here Comes Gosling will be performed inside Trike Theater's Black Box Theater. Details for both performances can be found at triketheater.org.
The Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is holding auditions for The Sound of Music. Adult auditions are scheduled for 6 and 7:30 p.m. May 5th. Children's auditions will begin at 10 a.m. May 10th. More information at artcenteroftheozarks.org.
The University of the Ozarks will close its 94th season of theater with an original play titled End of My Rope. This dramatic comedy was written by graduating theater major David Plubel. Performances are scheduled for May 2nd and 3rd in the Walton Black Box Theater. That's on the U of O campus in Clarksville. Admission $8 for the public. Students, faculty, and staff with their ID can receive one free ticket at the door while those free tickets last. Additional information at ozarks.edu/theater.
Crimes of the Heart will be on stage at Rogers Little Theater May 2nd through the 4th and 8th through the 10th. There will also be a RLT Mother's Day brunch May 11th. The 1986 film adaptation was directed by Bruce Beresford and garnered 3 Academy Award nominations, including one for Best Adapted Screenplay. More details at rogerslittletheater.org.
Do we have that robin's egg blue?
Yeah, I need to cut some.
Okay. Blish, if you have a chance, cut that robin's egg blue.
Last week, Jerry Weatherford was on stage at Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville. Actually, he was on a ladder on stage at NWAC. Jerry is overseeing the technical aspects of the production, The Giver.
Actually, give me back 27. I want to pair these two together so I've got the right coverage.
The Giver script imagines a world without war or vice, but there are also few choices. At age 12, everybody is assigned a career for the rest of their life. The ideal of sameness is reached in an effort to create fairness and eliminate the darker side of the human condition. That also means the eradication of some of the positives, like joy and love. The play zeroes in on one 12-year-old boy, Jonas. Jonas has been given the overwhelming task of receiving the memories of the entire community. Those memories, which reveal hypocrisy and other human frailties, will be projected onto the NWAC stage on 3 separate screens. Jerry Weatherford says that makes this production a technical challenge.
Because in The Giver, within the sameness, to convey how Jonas receives his memories, we're using PowerPoint projections. So we have these video projections of stills and videos to convey these images that are being given to Jonas.
Those 3 screens that will be on stage at NWAC mean Jerry is limited in where he can point the stage lights that will be used to create moods for other scenes. And that means he has fewer than usual lights to create more than the usual settings. He calls this a curveball. He calls this fun,
but at the same time, a little frustrating.
The NWAC production is a chance for students at the school to act, of course, but also a chance for students to work behind the scenes as well. Monica Brigham has worked backstage before, as well as acted on stage. Jerry has tapped her to be the assistant technical director for the staging of The Giver. She says she became interested in working on the technical side of a play after she had been on stage in previous productions in Texas. She thought knowing more about the literal nuts and bolts would make her more well-rounded.
Theater is actually one of my biggest passions in life. I'm an English major, but I recently discovered that I want to be a drama major as well because I want to get into playwriting. And in order to be a good playwright, you need to know all aspects and be able to build in the technical side as well as just people on stage saying lines is fine. But if you don't know what goes on behind scenes and you're not a well-rounded theater person, then in the end you just have, you know, a script with words.
She says hammering, building, painting, and aiming stage lights actually makes her more at home with a script than acting. She says the experience she gains by watching the technical aspects come together gives her an all-inclusive view of the author's work.
When you read the script, you start to see colors. Okay, where is this color going to go? The actor is moving in this direction. What colors do you see moving with them, or what furniture pieces do you see them moving towards? And so it brings in a lot more creativity because you have to see everything as a whole and you're putting the pieces together, not just worried about learning lines to the script.
All right, we got shadows. We're going to have to address those. Let's look at 14. 14's free, isn't it? Yeah.
What Jerry Weatherford calls fun, the rest of us might call tedious. On this particular night, he was going over and over and over certain lights pointed a certain direction and how they worked with other lights pointed a certain direction, all to make sure there is a seamless feel when the production is staged in front of a paying audience.
I knew that I had a night scene at the end, and knowing blue lighting, I do it first because it eats up a lot of instruments. So I have to go ahead, and that was the first thing I did. I've got a couple more instruments that I need to add some blue to, but still, it's the first thing to do, and then I can add on and use that blue for color correction in other scenes as well.
Most of the time, the tech work you see, you don't really think about when you're sitting in the audience. However, there has been a past production at Northwest Arkansas Community College, their version of the rock opera Tommy, that put one of Jerry's creations front and center. The giant pinball machine used for that production was created by Jerry. Whether you notice his work or not, he says he loves creating the technical tapestry for a play.
I do, okay, because tech theater is just fun, all right? People think of theater oftentimes as just the acting. Well, it's not. And I learned that years ago on a show, Brigadoon, Diablo Light Opera Company in Concord, California. It was fun. Walnut Creek, actually. But I really loved tech then. And since then, I've been drawn to tech. And, of course, I still like getting on stage and acting now and again, but tech is just so much fun.
Last week, Jerry Weatherford and the technical crew he's assembled were working on their own inside White Auditorium to make sure the screens were hung right and the lights were going to shine in the right position. The cast has already worked on their lines. He says he loves it when the two elements come together.
The run-through with the script has been, you know, I read through it and figured out and got an idea, a feeling for what was going to be happening. And then I've watched the actors on stage, get a feel for where they're at, when, to get the general locations for the various scenes. And then the rest, it'll be fine-tuning to get the right lighting at the right place at the right time. So I'm probably going to have to come back and fine-tune, make a minor adjustment here and there, to get the light right where I need it.
The cast and crew will present the Northwest Arkansas Community College production of Lois Lowry's play, The Giver, beginning Friday night. Curtain will go up at 7. Other productions will take place April 26th, as well as May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. If you'd like more information, you can go to nwacc.edu. This is Ozarks at Large.
On the next Fresh Air, a legal battle in the fight for marriage equality. We talk with New York Times reporter Joe Becker, author of Forcing the Spring. Her book focuses on the challenge to California's Proposition 8, which brought together former legal opponents Ted Olson and David Boies, who argued on behalf of gay marriage in state appeals and the Supreme Court. Join us.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, it is our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back. What do you got for me today?
Glad to be back, Kyle. And sometimes you just have to shake your head. I swear to you, this is a true story.
Okay.
I overheard the conversation of a millennial and his late baby boomer era coworker in a cafeteria. He says to the friend, as they look up at the television screen, "What does this JFK mean to me? They're acting like he's some kind of celebrity. What's the big deal? Him being president, he doesn't mean anything to me."
All right. I know that you wouldn't tell me this if it wasn't true, but this sounds just like some bad television trope of a slacker character.
Oh, yeah. Some Bill O'Reilly nightmare of the undereducated American youth run wild. But and we've repeatedly said this here. This is not something unique to this generation.
Right.
About every generation appears to know little about its common past, and every generation's elder rails about kids these days.
So is this a 911 call to a historian? Did you run over and administer the paddles to the chest and say, here's...
You know, I thought about it, and at the same time, one wonders if the historic impact of that genuine first ever that rarely comes along, mm-hmm. has sunk in on this young man that he probably voted in his first presidential election this cycle or the cycle before, and he was a part of the generation that yielded the first African-American to occupy the Oval Office.
True.
In some ways, he might be too close to see what he was a part of, but just the right distance away to not understand what he was watching on TV. Perhaps one way to frame his perspective was the equal befuddlement that he had in talking when he said to his friend, "Why is the video black and white and sometimes it's in color?"
He said that. So
he said that.
So did he think it was some sort of video editing or?
Well, sure, he's seen that on Instagram filters, so I'm sure that's why he thought they were doing it. That, you know, why wouldn't all the video have been in color?
So it never hit him that there was a time before video when the pictures hadn't been in color?
It was a classic, I don't know what he doesn't know kind of moment. You know, did he really see it that way? But he was genuinely, befuddled.
Well, okay, this brings up a good point, because you don't want to sound like those guys on The Muppet Show that are in the balcony.
Yeah.
You don't want to...
You don't have a Statler and Waldorf moment?
Those guys, yeah. You don't want to wag your finger, because that's not going to do anything. So what do you do?
You know, in part, he's a victim of the knowledge valley that I think exists, particularly in high school history today. You've got a generation of teachers that grew up not necessarily learning all the details of the latter half of the 20th century because it was still current events to their instructors when they were getting their doctorates in college.
Right.
There's always been this kind of lag. I mean, I experienced it when it had to deal with the end of the Second World War and the Cold War because, you know, there was that generational lag in the people that taught me when I was in college. So, you know, there's always this recent history little valley sometimes in the knowledge base, and then that gets passed on.
But isn't there an opportunity, because we did have the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. We're dealing every month, it seems, with the 150th anniversary of something with the Civil War. Isn't there a chance with anniversaries to kind of connect?
There is, and the end of a very significant one, Mad Men.
The TV show.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I love that series, and it is about to start. It's not that far away from ending its final season. So tell me, how does Don Draper fit into this?
Okay.
I know you will tell me.
What made Mad Men so successful?
Oh, just it was like a window on a previous time.
The series wove the historical events into a truth told through fiction.
Right.
Of the changes of the 1960s and the 1970s, the exact time period of
Camelot, the Kennedys.
Bingo. And civil rights and great American unrest and the Beatles' arrival in America notwithstanding, this year does begin a series of not so golden anniversaries. JFK's assassination in 63 begats a litany of 50s, the Gulf of Tonkin, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King.
So we should set people down, maybe young people, for a binge-watching series of Mad Men?
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
But taking advantage of what's about to flow across the television the rest of this year and into the next few, you know, I could say that we both remember when the History Channel actually used to carry history.
Yes.
And I know you know when music television actually meant music on television. So, you know, watch the offerings on your Kindles and in the bookstores. More and more popular histories are going to start recapping these events that fill that little valley that this individual has in his knowledge base. Taking an active interest in why the president was important to you, and I'm going to make an assumption here, minimum wage worker.
Because you're young and, yeah.
Because he was the first president, Kennedy, since FDR to raise and broaden the minimum wage. Who raised the minimum wage first for government workers when he did it? Who raised it by 25% over 2 years of his administration? That's something that directly relates to the political contest underway today with the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue as he tries to lift the minimum wage by a similar percentage, but he's trying to lift it to $10. So who was JFK? The conservative who said a rising tide lifts all ships and cut taxes? Or the progressive that felt it was okay to raise a $1 minimum wage set in 1938 to $1.25. That's the 25% increase. This is what our young man needs to dive into and begin to understand about why that guy was being treated like a celebrity.
Well, until that young guy asks us what we can do for our country,
we're history.
Last week, the Springdale Municipal Airport announced receipt of a $150,000 renovation grant from the Arkansas Department of Aeronautics to help pave the way for a new terminal access road. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with James Smith, facilities manager at the Springdale Airport, about the grant, the project, and the importance of a municipal airport to the area. Smith started by explaining where the funding for the grant comes from.
It's part of the tax that all the pilots pay for fuel.
Okay.
So it's all part of the state grant.
Okay. All pilots or just the pilots that use the Springdale Airport?
All Arkansas pilots or all pilots that buy fuel in Arkansas.
What will these funds be used for? What's going on over there?
Well, we have two fuel farms. One's been in since, I think, the mid-'80s, and the other one's been in for about 7 years. And we need to remove the one that's old for the fact that it's just becoming high maintenance. And we've got a new perimeter road that we're putting in for the terminal. So we have an access road that we're putting in, and this fuel farm's in the way.
Where will they be moved to?
There's a fuel farm that's just due east of where this one is, and we're going to lay a new tank in there.
Okay. What is the need for a new road?
Well, right now, the Airport Avenue that comes into the terminal building is right next to Jones Elementary School, and then a trucking company on the south side. So you have semis that pull up and back in, block the road, and then twice a day, it's just almost impossible to get up the road due to school traffic.
Who uses the Springdale Airport?
Well, you have all your local business people, Tyson's, Bruner and Lay, Lindsay's, George's, and you got a lot of charter jets that come and go.
Do you have numbers? I mean, how many planes take off daily? What is your monthly, yearly usage?
Well, that's a good question. I don't have it right in front of me. I know we are the third largest airport in Arkansas for home-based airplanes. So Little Rock and North Little Rock is the two airports that has more home-based aircraft than us.
What do you mean by home-based?
Meaning the amount of hangars that we house aircraft.
All right.
So we have probably about 150 planes that's stationed on this field.
And that's primarily the businesses that you named, but surely there are also individuals.
Like I said, the majority of the aircraft on the field is general aviation, just small aircraft, individual pilots.
Like you? Do you have a plane?
I do not.
You don't?
I know a lot of people who fly, so I have all the options.
This being the third largest in the state, what is the importance of having an airport like the Springdale Municipal Airport? I mean, you know, there's X&A just not too far away.
Right. X&A is totally different than us. X&A is for passenger airlines. So they deal with all the passengers. We deal with all the business end of it and the private charter service. So we take care of a different clientele totally.
Completely.
So when X&A went in, it really didn't affect us.
Not at all.
None.
What about, I know there's Drake Field in Fayetteville. How is Springdale different from the Fayetteville Airport?
Basically, it's about the same. We're both GA airports, so we're general aviation. And so we take care of business clients, charter services, individual planes. So,
where does the funding come from for just the maintenance and day-to-day stuff that goes on there?
We have all of our hangar rentals and then a fuel sales. Our FBO, Summit Aviation, Summit, they pay a fuel flowage fee to the city. So we use that into our budget.
When will you get started on this project?
The fuel farm is set to begin June, and they're hoping to have it completed early August.
Do you think the road will be completed by the time school starts in August?
No.
No.
I wish, but I would say it's going to be probably starting shortly thereafter.
Yeah. It won't start until August.
Right, because the fuel farm is the beginning of that project, and we have to put the road out for bid and then apply for grants from the Federal Aviation.
I know. I mean, Springdale is growing eastward out toward the airport. Has the growth of the area affected the Springdale Airport?
No. We pretty much control a five-mile radius, the airspace over the airport. So anything going within that range has to be airspace through the FAA. So they keep us posted for anything coming or going, and also they have to be approved through the city engineer. So they're all aware of our airspace.
James Smith is the facilities manager with Springdale Municipal Airport. He says the airport is planning another project, a $1 million renovation of the terminal, with the hopes of expanding the balcony at the terminal restaurant, Flaps Down Grill, for optimum runway viewing. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, supported by the City of Fayetteville and dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook for photos and information.
Support for KUAF comes from Greenhouse Grill, featuring a seasonal menu of organic, locally grown produce and all-natural meats, plus organic beer and wines. Live weekly music and full-service catering available. Located at 481 South School in Fayetteville's Mill District and on the web at greenhousegrill.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Paris.
And if you are going to sit with fellow KUAF listeners and some of us from KUAF at the Naturals game Thursday night, you got to get those KUAF Night with the Natural tickets today.
Yes, you have to order those today. I think maybe there was some confusion that you could just walk up or whatever, but because of the way that we're doing it, we're in charge of passing out our own tickets, and so the Naturals requested that people make their orders today so they could print the tickets and get those separated for us. And it's not just any tickets that you order for the game. You have to order through 927-4063, and you can talk to Trey, and he'll take your order.
And you can order, well, as many as you want.
You can. I ordered a chunk yesterday.
Yeah, I'm going to order a chunk here in just a couple of minutes. And then we'll all be together. We'll enjoy the game.
Yeah, it should be fun.
On-field photo.
I think if we sell 200, we'll have an on-field photo.
And then if we also sell 200, someone gets to throw out the first pitch.
Mm-hmm. Not quite sure where we are with that, but
I'm not either.
So, yeah.
I'm going.
I'll be there.
All right. Mm-hmm. Sounds like fun. And also remember that the Roots Festival giveaway is Friday on the noon edition of Ozarks at Large.
Mm-hmm. So still your chance to register for that at KUAF.com.
And you had a good weekend?
I did. Busy. Easter and family and friends in town. So you constantly busy.
You went to Springfest?
I did. It was. It seemed like it was bigger than last year. So that's always good. The bed races were back, of course. They broke a bed. I don't know. It was like the last race. So,
right.
You know, that was convenient. I don't know if they were able to fix it post-race.
Well, to be fair, beds are not made to be pushed down at
high
speeds.
Sure, sure. But yeah, so no, that was a good time in the farmer's market, of course. And yeah, it's just good to see people kind of out and enjoying the nice weather.
And it was nice weather. I was in Texas, so
It was good and warm and sunny, and I should have worn sunscreen.
There you go, boys and girls. There is your public service announcement
but it's
for the day.
All right, I'll be nice and tan now, so, you know, it works out.
Okay, very good. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You'll be with Christina tomorrow at noon with another brand new edition.
I will.
We're going to hear some music now from Still on the Hill. This is from their CD, Not Yet Out. We'll hear more from Kelly and Donna next week about this brand new CD. This is one of the songs that will be included on the brand new CD. It's an instrumental. It's called LaRue, about the town that's on the shores of Beaver Lake. Thank you.